It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent rodhunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show. I have an email that was sent to me from one of my listeners. It says, Bob, I was listening to your show on Sunday, August 25th, 2024, and you said that Kamala Harris is African-American. She's not African-American. She's Jamaican and Indian. Where did you get that she's African-American? She's not black either. She's brown. Get it straight. As I often do, I'm not going to mention the name of the person that wrote this, but I'm not sure where the hostility is coming from, in as much as it seems he and I are on the same page, more or less. I do realize that I'm not hearing him audibly, and sometimes the written word is not the best courier, since it does not reflect voice tone or perhaps something said tongue-in-cheek. In any event, friend, technically I agree with you. She is not African, and therefore the description African-American is not accurate. However, in answer to your question of where I am getting that from, I'm getting it from her. She has described herself that way, along with other designations, Indian-American, person of color, etc. In 2012, she did an interview hosted by Digital News with an organization called The Wrap. She was attorney general at that time, and she referred as both African-American and Asian American. So there are lots of times like that, but there's one that I could actually authenticate immediately. I suppose it can be argued that she should be free to describe herself any way she wishes. That's fine. But personally, I don't care for any such titles when used for political advantage or identity politics. My point over the air was that this should not be important, and we should instead pay attention to people's policies. Having said that, I agree that however she describes herself, we do not have to accept the title. Now, if she wanted to push the point, just for the record, most of the black population in Jamaica came from African slaves brought to Jamaica from colonizers, just as African slaves were brought to America from colonizers. But still, at this point, it becomes quite the lengthy description for a person to say, I'm African, Jamaican, American, and also Indian American. Why do we need to classify people that way? Why do people need to classify themselves that way? I'll just use myself as an example. Both my grandfathers were born in Russia, so I'm half Russian. I also have Polish ancestry from my mother's side of the family. As far as nationality goes, I do not call myself Russian, Polish, American, just American. If I want to use a title that best describes what my life is all about and what I stand for, I use the word Christian. Anyway, I hope this clarifies where I am coming from. As for where Kamala is coming from, who knows? The story of her background and the story of what policy she stands for is ever morphing. Thank you for your letter.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Say hello to Jim Barrier.
Well, it's really good to be with you tonight, Bob. I've been looking forward to being on the show. I always do.
And I always look forward to having you as well.
Well, here we go. The Mutual Admiration Society, brought to you by...
Yes.
Oh, okay. You know, I loved your intro there, and I don't know why people feel the need to get all worked up about stuff like that. And I agree with you completely. The election should never be about race or gender or any of those things, yet human nature and people being as they are going to make it an issue. And if a politician can use it to their advantage, they're absolutely going to make it an issue. Oh, boy, we're going to have the presidential debate in a couple of nights. And
I love hearing people prepare for it. Trump needs to be careful because if he interrupts her, she's going to do like she did when she was with Pence, and he's going to look like a bully clobbering a woman, and she wants that moment. And these are the same people that are always saying, hey, a woman can do anything in a man's world. A woman would be just as strong as a president. A woman can sit across the table from Putin. They can't have it both ways. So they say that, and then it's like, oh my gosh, he interrupted me, and he's a man, and I'm a woman. I'm so sick and tired of this hypocrisy coming out of both sides of people's mouths.
Yeah, it really is a double standard. Yeah, I hope that Trump will behave himself in that, you know, he won't be rude and be himself. And,
what he needs to do is ask her specific questions, like, can you define a woman? I'd love to see a Kamala Harris word salad over that question. We had a nominee for the Supreme Court that couldn't answer that question. I'd love to see her do it.
Which is interesting, because they can't do that until there's an issue about women's rights. Then they're very clear about who's a woman and who's not. Yeah, and if she's running, you know, she recently gave a nod to Hillary Clinton for cracking the glass ceiling. Well, that's about being a woman. That should not be...
Well, Hillary didn't exactly crack the glass ceiling because she didn't win that election anyway.
Well,
you just got to love it. All these rules.
Yeah. Now, I wonder how well her people have prepared her, because if she gets up there and starts with the word salad and the cackling and the nonsensical things and the vagueness, that's not going to work for her.
I believe she got her questions in advance, just like Donna Brazile gave them to Hillary in advance on that previous CNN debate back in 2016. So I believe she's had time. Also, as she's rehearsing, you're going to hear the words prosecutor referring to herself and convicted felon referring to Trump. You're going to hear that at least 20 times during the debate.
I wonder if he's going to bring up the albatross around her neck, as she described it way, way back when she was in the primaries running against Joe Biden and all the rest of them, and that was her relationship with Willie Brown out there in the state of California.
Oh, and the fact that she called Biden a segregationist and a racist, but then she went on his ticket and then cackled and laughed about it when asked afterwards that it was a debate. Yeah. I will say this, though, Jim, I will say this. Even if Trump wins this debate, just like when he won the debate with Biden, I went on the air and I said, look, the Democrats have more rabbits to pull out of their hats. I think it's very possible that Trump will win this debate and win the election and And if he does, the Democrats will not certify him in January. Yeah. Even if Republicans take back the Senate and the House, remember, on January 6th, the new Congress will not be in yet. They will not certify this guy. So with all their talk about being election denied, we're going to hear, we cannot in good conscience certify a convicted felon. That's what they're going to do. Mark my words.
Maybe they'll have their own insurrection.
Oh, it's not an insurrection when they do it. They can burn down cities from coast to coast during the Summer of Love, even federal buildings. That's not an insurrection.
So that's going to be odd. And let me get a couple of things out of the way here, schedule-wise. I will be back on the show this month on the 29th. So doing two shows this month because I'm going to be out of the country for the whole month of October.
And then when you return, the election will probably be over, won't it?
It will be over unless they're still counting hanging chads or something. I don't know. So I just wanted to point that out, and I'll have to watch from afar. I can always listen to things. I can read the news and stuff, and I can pay attention online. But Leslie and I have this marvelous trip. We're going all over Europe, and I'm very excited about it. And I promised her when I retired a few years ago that we would travel. And because of COVID, and then I had my eyeball issues where I've had retina surgery and most recently cataract surgery, which, by the way, went very, very well. And all of these things have interrupted her plans. I always say, Leslie loves me and has a wonderful plan for my life.
Well, just be careful in Europe. Don't get into the kind of trouble that Lucy Ricardo got into when she went there with Ricky during his band trip to Europe.
Oh, we're reaching way back. Oh, no, we'll stay out of trouble. We've learned how to blend in. But this woman is so organized. She has a spreadsheet that is 17 printed pages long. It's just incredible.
Well, it sounds like a great trip, and I hope you have a wonderful time. Okay, I also hope our audience has a wonderful time during this next break. We will return to the Bob Siegel Show. Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in three serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring.
Houses burned down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, license number 480539, WNS Electric. You're listening to the Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Always a privilege to be joined by my good friend and pastor, Jim Barrier.
Well, so let's jump into it. And I want to remind all of the people in San Diego that the NFL season started this weekend, and most San Diegans don't know that because San Diego is no longer an NFL city. My condolences to you.
Okay.
Wanted to talk with you tonight about, we've hit this subject before on bits and pieces, about the relationship between Christianity and Hollywood, Hollywood being a generic term talking about filmmakers, TV shows, that whole thing. I've been thinking about this recently. Leslie and I have been binging on TV crime shows. We watch reruns of it on the streaming channels and have some of our favorite shows. But it just seems to me, in a lot of those shows, Christians are often portrayed as fanatics and hypocrites and lunatics. Even pastors are sometimes the main murder suspects. And it just seems very imbalanced. And it carries over, you know, not only on TV, but well, sitcom. The Christians are often buffoons. You never see a normal Christian, hardly ever, in a TV show, or someone who's balanced or healthy or mentally stable. They're always goofballs. And it just seems disproportionate.
And you find it that way on the issues, too. Like, there was one that was called God Friended Me. I watched it for a while, but there was a lesbian character in the show, and her dad was a pastor. And, of course, he had problems with her being a lesbian. But he finally came around. He said, I looked at my daughter, and I saw love, and I saw courage, and I saw God. Now, he could have been just as compassionate and portrayed just as compassionate by saying, you know what? I can't go away from what the scripture says. I believe homosexuality is wrong, but I love my daughter and I always will love my daughter. That could have sounded just as compassionate and merciful, but that wasn't the way they did it. So he was portrayed as a hypocrite until he accepted her. So they would have called that a positive portrayal of him, but only because he came around to a leftist point of view.
Yeah, and there's always the agenda that's going on there. Now, we watched a series recently called The Lost Symbol, written by Dan Brown, you know, who did the Da Vinci Code and all of those.
Yeah, which was, I was talking about this today. The Da Vinci Code was a very well-written book artistically. I give it an A+. It was a page-turner. It had well-drawn characters. But as far as facts and history and an understanding of the Bible, it was a living nightmare.
Yeah, and that's the way this show was. Of course, we watched Da Vinci Code and the other one, Angels and Demons, and Tom Hanks. I love Tom Hanks. But this Lost Symbol, it really zeroes in on the Freemasons in Washington, D.C., and the history of America, and the ancient truths that they're trying to discover. And it was intense, it was exciting, it was very well written, and the actors were great. The problem is, they take the Bible completely out of context, and they quote passages, some that are actually in the Bible, and some that are just twisted.
And Freemasonry is a cult and has its problems, but if they were trying to mix that into Christianity, just because there have been people that would have called themselves Masons and Christians, then that was a distortion.
Well, and that's a big part of this series. Christianity is linked to cults and secret societies. You know, they talk about the Freemasons and the Illuminati and all that, and they make it sound like those things are biblically based. And no doubt, many of those folks read their Bibles and knew parts of Christianity, but the lines are blurred. And so someone who's watching these things is thinking, oh, well, Christianity is all about that stuff, too. That was my problem with Da Vinci Code. Before, I hadn't read the book, but I finally saw the movie. But people were telling me, this, oh, this is great, but did you know that Jesus was actually married? And I'm going, it's a fiction, folks. It's a fiction.
What's also a fiction is one of the reasons people liked the Da Vinci Code is because of the way they elevated Mary Magdalene. And they were saying it gave a more elevated view of women. The Bible already has an elevated view of women. In the resurrection accounts, it was the women disciples of Jesus that saw his resurrection first. They went back to the men and the men didn't believe it. Nobody that wants to invent a myth in a patriarchal culture is going to say a thing like that. It just shows the painstaking accuracy of the historians and gospel writers.
Yeah.
And it was quite a testimonial to women.
Oh, there's some great stuff in there. And there's some great heroes in the Old Testament that are female.
Deborah?
Yeah. Well, you know, one of my favorites is Rahab. Not only was she a woman, she wasn't a Jew, and her occupation wasn't.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say not only was she a woman, but she was a working woman. She was certainly that.
She's mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11 in the Hall of Fame of Faith, but my problem comes up very early in the drama, and they're looking at a painting of the Last Supper by Leonardo, and I've seen that. I've actually seen the real one, which is an incredible, incredible thing to behold. But they're saying that the character there that Jesus writes is Mary Magdalene. And look how feminine she looks, and oh, how pretty she is. And the problem is, where is the Apostle John? It's like, it's bad math. Bad math. You got Jesus and 12 people, And one of them supposedly is Mary. Where is John, who is a prophet?
And nobody in Da Vinci's day interpreted that any differently. That was the disciples. That was not Mary Magdalene. Yeah, that was the way people were drawn in those days.
Well, but people read the book or saw the film primarily, and they came away thinking, oh, I didn't know that. It was a myth. It was fiction. It was great drama. But folks, don't believe that stuff.
Yeah, and it's hard when you want to be a fair critic and say artistically this was well done, but it had a horrible message. As a matter of fact, the better something's done artistically, the more important it is to get the message right. And if the message is wrong, it can become very dangerous.
Yeah, we've discussed this in other issues, other pieces of work by people. Now, there was a much worse film, I think, Martin Scorsese's The Last Temptation of Christ.
Oh, what a nightmare. And you know what? I did not have a problem with the fact that they were talking about Christ being tempted. Christ right. was tempted without sin. Mm-hmm. But they did dumb things, like they had this scene where Jesus was on the cross and he got teleported into the future and he met the Apostle yeah. Paul and he said, "You're distorting my message." And Paul says, "Who yeah. cares? It's working." Stuff that's just completely untrue. And that goes back to a liberal scholarship talking point, very erroneous talking point, that Paul's the one who invented Christianity and the Jesus yeah, Paul yeah. preached was not the real Jesus. And I'm just going, Scorsese, if you were to do your homework, you would find that these so-called scholars are not being all that scholarly.
Well, people aren't going to find the truth unless they really want to find the truth. Otherwise, they'll just make up their own truth. And then one last, not too long ago on the Stump Jim Barrier part of the show, a song from Monty Python's Life of Brian.
Oh, was that the Always Look on the Bright Side of Life? Is that the one
yeah,
we did?
Yeah.
I love that. Always look on the bright side of life.
Stop it. Stop it. Now, here's the thing.
That was such a hilarious movie, Monty, though. It was just hilarious.
You can enjoy The Life of Brian, as sacrilegious as it was. Don't get on my case about enjoying the music from Jesus Christ Superstar. So we've got
to... No, there's a little... I'm not assuming that the people of Monty Python were trying to be sacrilegious. I just think they were trying to be funny. That's what I thought. Although, you know, that movie's become dated now because there was a Jewish underground organization trying to overthrow the Romans. They were talking about their rights. And one of them says, "I have a right to have a baby." And they say, "But you're a man. You can't have a baby." He says, "Yes, but I have a right." You wouldn't be able to show that today because it wouldn't fit in with our agenda.
Yeah.
It's not woke.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Well, the woke
truth gets stranger than fiction.
It wrecked everything. But these are just some examples of big name people, big time films that totally got it wrong, and they misconstrued the message. They have wrongly portrayed Christ. You know, The Life of Brian, I mean, they're mocking the crucifixion, which is central to the message of Christianity. But that's accepted in Hollywood. I have a problem with all of that.
Well, again, I'm not sure they meant to be sacrilegious. However, I agree with you. If Hollywood took it as sacrilegious and liked it for that reason, that speaks very accurately about where Hollywood is at.
Yeah, I've always had this thing when presenting the gospel, I've had a cliche, and that is that people can't always receive the good news until they've heard the bad news first. Which is, you have to explain to people that we are all gone astray and we're fallen and we need a Savior. Then we present the Savior. So
exactly. If somebody doesn't know they've been sinful, they don't know that they need a Redeemer. Okay, hold that thought, Jim. We will be right back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
People are enjoying Bob Siegel's time travel novel, Push the Winds Around. Check out these customer reviews on Amazon.com. This is one of those books, like certain movies, where you keep thinking about it long after you finished. Once I picked it up, I didn't want to put it down until I'd read the entire book. Literally, a page-turner. Every character came to life. Their personalities were well-defined and consistent. First thing I did after I finished the book was to ask about the sequel. The next customer said, I read this book cover to cover in one sitting. Great read with completely unexpected ending that left me wishing there was just one more chapter. Give yourself a couple of hours to read it all at once because you won't want to put it down. Push the Winds Around, available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show, the show that has a show within a show, and our show is Stump Jim Barrier.
All right, Jim. Well.
All right.
We meet again.
What do you got?
All right. I'm going to go way out your realm here, I think, on this one here, but we're going to go to the year 1983 for this one here. Are you ready, sir?
83?
Yes, 1983.
Oh, my.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, give it a shot. Here we go.
I was as wrong as I could be to let you get away from me. I'll regret that move for as long as I'm living. But now that I've come to see...
Any guesses, Jim, or no?
I'll take a wild guess. I'm going to be way off here because I didn't listen to music in the 80s, but is it Billy Joel?
No, it is Sergio Mendez with Never Gonna Let You Go.
Oh. How about that?
Oh, how the mighty have fallen.
Yeah. Wow.
A reason why I played that is because he recently passed away at the age of 83.
83.
Those are your clues to study up on, Jim. Usually Brendan plays something from someone that just passed away.
Yeah.
I'm noticing a pattern here. Just read the trade papers before you come on. Okay, who just passed away? Brendan will probably play that
this
week.
That's probably, yeah. Right.
Well, if you had played Mas Que Nada...
I was thinking of that, but then the lyric is right at the beginning, and I would have given it to you.
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. I have to look at the lyrics again. I could have sworn that it was at the very beginning. To go along with what you guys were saying super, super quick, television does the exact same thing with religion, too, and sometimes people can be offended with that. The first thing that came to my mind was there was an animated TV show that came out in 2000 called God, the Devil, and Bob, and that show was about God and the devil deciding to make a bet over the fate of the world. If God didn't see that the world has changed at all, he was going to wipe out humanity, and so the devil chose just a random blue-collar worker from Detroit to represent humanity. And so
did they make the devil more the good guy and God more the bad?
No, but specifically they made God a very flawed character. Like he was making mistakes and all that stuff. I get in a writing sense you have to make him a flawed character, because if he was just the most perfect character in the world, every episode would solve just like that, so you would barely have any episodes to begin with. But at the same time, we're talking about a really touchy subject of religion here, so that's why it got very offensive, and it only lasted 3 episodes on air before it got canceled.
Yeah, so. The unregenerated giving us their version of God just doesn't go too far.
No, not at all.
Well, I never even saw that show. Now I remember.
I never even heard of that one.
I remember the George Burns movie, Oh God.
Now that was pretty funny, although again, it was kind of dumb. He'd say Jesus was my son, Buddha was my son, Muhammad.
Buddha was my son. Yeah.
However, it was George Burns in the courtroom, and they ask him to prove that he's God by doing a miracle. He goes, "Miracle, okay. Pick a card, any card." I mean, those were great lines.
He swore him in. He says, "So help me."
And it was written and directed by the brilliant Carl Reiner, who gave us the Dick Van Dyke Show. Yeah. So there's another one. one. Would I recommend that movie for entertainment? Absolutely. Would I recommend it for theology? Absolutely not.
Probably not.
Now, I remember people walking out of the theaters going, wow, what a concept. God becoming a man and coming down to earth. I'm thinking, where have we heard of that one before?
Yeah, anthropomorphism. Now, let's get the good news, because we kind of railed against Hollywood here. We do that a lot, but they deserve it. When you and I grew up, I'm including you because you're close to my age. You're not quite as old as me. But when we grew up, there were movies like The Ten Commandments and The Greatest Story Ever Told. Ben-Hur.
Ben-Hur was my favorite. And The Robe. We've talked about The Robe over the year.
Yeah. And those films, they were not just acceptable. The public allowed it and Hollywood produced it. They were blockbusters. I mean, Ben-Hur won 11 Oscars, which is later
That was the all-time record until Titanic tied them a number of years later. That was the all-time record at the time.
One of the Lord of the Rings movies, I think, tied.
One of the Lord of the Rings got 11, the last one, and then also Titanic. And Titanic did not deserve 11 Oscars. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But I absolutely loved Ben-Hur. And I liked the fact that it was really more about the people around Jesus. You only saw the back of Jesus' head. And they did that in The Robe, too. And I thought there was something to that, the less is more idea.
I appreciated that too. And of course, you know the story, I'm sure. The original book was written by General Lew Wallace. He was an atheist and he went over to the Holy Land. He said, I'm going to disprove this whole Christianity thing once and for all. And he came back a believer and he wrote the story Ben-Hur. And I have the unedited version, which takes a long, long time to watch. And the intro is really, really long, and it shows Joseph and Mary headed to Bethlehem, and it shows the wise
men. Yeah, they start out with the nativity. They do.
Yeah, and then when the credits finally come up, it says, Ben-Hur, a tale of the Christ.
Yeah, and it's really a tale of a fictitious man named Ben-Hur, but it's about the way the Christ affected people's lives.
And that's the point. It was a tale of the Christ because it was talking about Jesus and how he loved people and how he transformed people's lives. And in this case, a fictitious character. But it was a great...
It was a great movie, and it was an excellent, historically accurate view, even though they had fictitious characters in it. It was a historically accurate view of the times and the tension between the Jews and the Romans and the Roman dominion.
Yeah, they did their homework on that one, and the actors did very well. Stephen Boyd, who played the nemesis, he went into hospitals and he watched people die and studied people dying for that scene when he finally dies in the film. Powerful film.
Did I ever tell you when they premiered the AMC 20 theaters here in San Diego, they opened by having a Charlton Heston movie on every screen. And it had Ben-Hur and the Ten Commandments, Planet of the Apes, the Omega Man. And they staggered the times of the movie so that Heston came out into the theater himself. He was there doing a book signing. And he came out and talked to the audience about the film for 10 minutes before. So I chose Ben-Hur. I would have enjoyed any of them. I'm a big Heston fan, but I chose Ben-Hur. He came out and he talked about the chariot race and how he was trained to drive the chariot, but of course they also had stuntmen. And he says, the guy working with me, he says, Charles, relax. I guarantee you're going to win the race. It was pretty funny.
Well, it was a great film. Now, there is kind of a comeback happening. I think the door was open 20 years ago now when Mel Gibson did The Passion of the Christ, which was very controversial, but a powerful movie, and it was about Jesus. I really liked the film myself, and I didn't, you know.
It's not a fun movie, but it's something everybody should see at least once because they show graphically how Christ was tortured before he went to the cross.
Graphic. I could argue, actually, that even back in 1998, I believe, was when the movie came out, Prince of Egypt also kind of revitalized.
That was an interesting Steven Spielberg animated The Prince of Egypt.
It was
Spielberg was one of the producers on that.
I know Katzenberg was. It came from DreamWorks. Yeah. It was DreamWorks' first ever movie.
Yeah.
What a bold way to start your new major Hollywood film company to do a religious film.
Yeah.
Well, in these days, our friend Ryan films movies in Texas now, and so there's a lot of independent movies, and of course, The Chosen isn't even filmed in Hollywood and is independently
produced.
I had a feeling we were going to get there eventually.
Yeah.
Because eventually there was a good portrayal of Jesus, and it was in The Chosen. Yeah.
There have been some good ones. I'm going to list a few titles, and you guys will think of some more. There was a movie that came out, Amazing Grace. It was a great film. It was about William Wilberforce, who wrote that tune.
Yes, I saw that. That was a very good movie. Yeah.
That was a great movie. And then we started having things like, so we had One Night with the King. Amazing. They did a movie about Esther out of the Old Testament.
That one I did not see.
It was well done. And then we started getting these kind of films. Did you see Fireproof with Kirk Cameron?
Yes, I did.
Another faith-based film. They came up with that title, Faith-Based Films. And that was pretty good. And then one of my favorites, again, Mel Gibson had a hand in this, directed to Hacksaw Ridge.
That one I did not see.
Oh, it's powerful. It's a story of a guy. He was a Seventh-day Adventist, I think, but he was a conscious objector, but he went to war, and he refused to carry a weapon, but he turned out to be a hero. I mean, he saved all kinds of lives and everything. It was a great film, and it was a fair portrayal of a believer that didn't make him look like, you know, I mean, at first it was hard because the other soldiers are mocking him and stuff, but the guy turned out to be a war hero. And then in 2017, The Chosen, which you mentioned, done by Angel Studios, who have really been, they have taken the lead on this whole thing. The Chosen, which is a TV series.
And that is a likable Jesus, I must say.
Yeah, yeah. But it started kind of a revolution here where actually faith-based films and TV shows could actually be successful, maybe even, make a profit. Speaking of revolution, the Jesus Revolution.
Yeah, we spent a whole radio show talking about that with you.
Yeah, great film. Because I was in the middle of that whole thing. I remember when it happened. That came out, believe it or not, last year, 2023, some of the best Christian films have come out. Jesus Revolution was one of them. And then Angel Studios started releasing films. The Sound of Freedom. Have you seen that one?
Yes, I have. A very intense, very important
Jim
film.
Jim Caviezel.
Yes.
Who was, yeah, he was in
the played Christ in The Passion of the Christ. Yeah, excellent actor.
Yeah, I love Jim Caviezel. I really do. And I've seen him in a lot of things. He had a TV show called Person of Interest. I don't know if you ever saw it. It was really a very strange movie, but I loved it. Or a TV show. So we have The Sound of Freedom, After Death. And this is a film about near-death experience. And a friend of mine, I've mentioned it before on the show, he was an atheist. We grew up together, and he has become a believer. He called me, and he said, if you've seen After Death, you have to see it. He's telling all his friends, you have to see this movie. So it was working. There's a message, people getting interested in what happens after we die. Now, very new one. I've mentioned this man before, Neil McDonough. He's absolutely one of my favorite actors today, and he's in a film, The Shift, which is an Angel Studios production. Also has Sean Astin, The Hobbit. Yeah. I think it's great when he can have a hobbit in a movie.
Yeah, there you go. He was also, wasn't he Rudy in the movie Rudy, Sean Astin? I think
yes,
so.
Yes, he was. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. Notre Dame didn't do so well this weekend, by the way.
Of course, his latest video was being one of the white guys for Kamala.
Yeah. In November, Angels Studios is releasing another film about Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And there have been several made recently, one of them with our friend Brian Holland.
Right. Okay, Brian. Hold that thought, Jim. We will be right back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Is there really proof for the resurrection of Christ? How could a loving God send people to hell? Why does the Bible call premarital sex a sin? How will God judge the people who never heard of Jesus? These are but some of the critical concerns keeping honest seekers from considering Christianity. In an interesting, down-to-earth style, Bob Siegel tackles the hardest, most painfully honest questions. Rather than shoving these topics under the rug, Bob shows respect for his readers by providing detailed and compelling explanations. This book will be enjoyed by both skeptics and Christians. I'd like to believe in Jesus, but... Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show in one more segment with Jim Barrier.
Okay, we talked about some faith-based films. I want to mention two other movies that I have seen recently that I really, really like. Well, actually, one of them was a few years back, but Kate Hudson, I call her Goldie Jr., she did a film called Raising Helen.
And, I never heard of that one.
Oh, I really liked it. And there's an actor, John Corbett, plays the role of a pastor. And I was just stunned because it's the first time I could remember a secular film where the pastor was an okay guy. He was a good guy. He wasn't wacko.
Yeah, it is rare.
I appreciated it for that. Now, it's kind of a comedy, dramedy, but it has a lot of redemptive qualities to it. But that was a good film, Raising Helen. And then this one was on streaming TV. Tom Hanks started a movie called Greyhound, and it's a World War II film, but it's before the U.S. has officially gone to war, and Navy ships were escorting ships from the United States.
Oh, the Lend-Lease to England?
Yeah, and then there's a stretch across the Atlantic where the U.S. planes have to turn around because they'll run out of fuel. And it's too far from England for the same reason that British planes can't get out there. So there's a stretch out there where they're vulnerable to the British U-boats. And it's a really good drama. We've been binging on World War II things because we're going to go to Normandy on our trip and see the whole D-Day thing. But this film was amazing because Tom Hanks, he's the central figure. He plays a commander of this Navy ship, and he's a Christian. And they don't downplay it. They don't overdo it, but they show him praying. He's got favorite scriptures and stuff. It's a great film because what you see is this guy is relying on divine intervention. He's asking for direction from God to help him to know what to do, which way to go. And it was a big, big piece of the story. And I was so pleased that Tom Hanks did a film like that and wasn't compromising about it. So Greyhound is a great movie, in my estimation. Of course, Tom Hanks rarely does anything that I don't like. He's just such a superb actor, and he is in this film, plays the role really well. But those were a couple of films that I liked that weren't necessarily faith-based, but they had great stories.
Did you see the new Reagan film? I know it's not exactly what I'd call faith-based, but I did think it was excellent.
I haven't seen it. I intend to see it because I've heard nothing but good about it. So let's talk about, that's a great segue, talk about some actors who identify as Christians. Now, a lot of people call themselves Christians, but I don't know how they understand Christianity. But here are some people that have really been great in recent years. Stephen Baldwin, of course. He's the anti-Alec.
Yeah, not to be confused with his brother Alec by any way, shape, or form.
He's 180 degrees. He's polar opposite of his brother. You might remember Candace Cameron Bure from Full House TV sitcom. Another guy I really like, Dean Cain. Remember
he was? Oh, yeah. He was in Lois and Clark originally.
Yeah. Loved him. Kirk Cameron, who, of course, has been very, very outspoken.
And, of course, Kevin Sorbo's in just about everything with the name Christian on it.
Yeah. Yeah, he's another one. He's a great one. Hercules.
Got his start as Hercules, or as became well-known through
that. We mentioned Jim Caviezel.
Yep.
Did you know Viola Davis is a Christian?
Have not heard of that one. Not familiar with that name.
She was in the movie The Help.
Oh, I did see that movie. That was an excellent movie.
Yeah, she was great. Patricia Heaton from Everybody Loves Raymond. Hugh Jackman identifies as a Christian.
That's interesting, really.
Yeah,
Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, Wolverine.
I loved his movie, Greatest Showman. I don't know if you've seen that. It's just an excellent movie.
You know, he's very talented. He does musical stuff.
Yeah, he does sing. Well, he starred in Les Miserables, did his own singing. He's very good.
Yeah, yeah. Agnes T. Jones. You know who he is? He was the kid in 2 and a Half Men.
Oh, yeah. I heard that kid had a conversion while he was on that show, and he had some trouble continuing to being on that show because it was so smutty in so many ways. Funny program, but not a lot of good moral values on it.
No, not at all. Local Texas boy Matthew McConaughey identifies as a Christian.
No, that I had not heard, but he's a very good actor.
Oh, he's done some great stuff. He's made some really good public statements about prayer and his upbringing and stuff. Neil McDonough, who I mentioned. Chuck Norris.
I at least knew he was conservative. Whether he was Christian, I had not heard.
He's a Christian. By the way, you know, when Chuck Norris does push-ups, the earth moves away from him.
And where does Chuck Norris sit? Anywhere he wants.
Kevin Sorbo, you mentioned him. Did you know that Mr. T became a Christian?
I believe I had heard that about. He was never my favorite actor, but I do think I heard that he was
entertaining,
a Christian.
Entertaining. Yeah. I pity the fool.
No God. I don't feel sorry for Balboa. I just pity the fool.
Because the fool of sinners are there is no God. Okay. Mark Wahlberg, he's Catholic, but he identifies as a Christian.
Well, that's interesting because the movie that gave him his big name to fame was Boogie Nights, which was where he played the part of a porn star. So
Yeah. Marky Mark. That's I remember when he was a hip-hop star.
Yeah.
Now, here's a guy I really, really, really love. Denzel Washington.
Yeah, very good actor. Very good actor.
I heard him tell his story about when he was a kid. He had an aunt who had a beauty parlor, and he would go in there after school, and all the women were talking, and his aunt prophesied over him and said that he was going to have a ministry, and he was going to reach millions of people.
No kidding. I saw him in was Glory, which was a wonderful movie.
He won an Oscar there. Did you see The Book of Eli?
Yes, The Book of Eli. I did see that. You find out toward the end of the movie that he's blind. Well, we're running out of time, Jim, but I think it was good to take a visit and revisit through Hollywood, the film and television industry. Wanted to thank you for bringing up this very interesting subject, and we will see you in a couple of weeks before you have your bon voyage to Europe.
All right, man.
All right. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the law offices of Matthew Simone.